welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Turn the Page, the official podcast of Syosset Public Library. I am one of your hosts, Jen Jordan, and I will have my other hosts introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Jody. I'm the head of teen services here at the Syosset Public Library.
And I am Jessica, community engagement and other things. And we're really excited to have our guest here today. Everybody's nodding. This is not a video podcast, but everybody's nodding because we are very excited. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us about this book? And we have lots of questions about lots of things.
Sounds good. Hi, I'm Kendara Blake. I am the author of the Three Dark Crown series and the Anna Dresden Blood Duet. And today I am here to talk about my newest novel, In Every Generation, which is a continuation of the Buffyverse. So it's a new Buffy the Vampire Slayer novel set approximately 17 years after the end of the show. And it follows the continuity of both Buffy and Angel.
So before we get going, I just have to say, because I say this every time we do any recording that's Buffy adjacent, I always have to say that Buffy belongs in a library because Giles, her watcher, was an awesome librarian. And I was talking to Jen about this a little bit before we started recording. But first of all, when I decided to go to library school, one of my friends was like, oh, you mean you're going to be like Giles? And I was like, yeah, actually, I would love to be like Giles. But the other thing that was interesting was, Jen, do you remember what you were saying about the high school library in Sunnydale?
Oh, yes. I remember even when I was watching the show as a teen, I remember being super impressed by the just collection of original manuscripts and ancient tomes that Sunnydale High seems to have. Like, we did not have any hand-drawn medieval manuscripts in our school library.
We didn't have any at our school library or my school library, which was actually Syosset. However, we did have a very tiny occult section in the 90s, which still surprises me to this day that it existed there.
So my first question for you would be about how you came into this project. Like, how, what have you written in the past and how did it all lead up to this? And I'm wondering, like, what was your relationship with the Buffyverse previous to your writing this? Was it something that you were familiar with or was it new to you? I'm just really curious about how you arrived at this project.
Sure. Yeah. My relationship with the Buffyverse was, you know, I think similar to most people's relationship with the Buffyverse. I grew up with Buffy. I've been a fan. I used to watch it when it was like on way back when there was no DVR even. So I was parked in front of the TV for an hour every Tuesday night. And that was just like, that was your plan. You just didn't make plans on Tuesday nights. So yeah, I've been a fan constantly, and Buffy was one of those shows that I've kind of rewatched. I own all seven seasons on DVD, and I brought them with me to grad school. When I went to grad school, I didn't have a TV, so I just brought the DVDs on repeat on my laptop. It was just a Buffy-filled year. So this was actually my first time writing for an IP. And for anybody who doesn't know what an IP is, it's intellectual property. It's something that's, you know, not, it doesn't belong to the author. It's pre-existing, like Batman, Superman, writing for Marvel, writing for DC, writing for Star Wars. That's a really big one now. So out of the blue, my agent emailed me and said, hey, Disney owns Buffy now, and they're looking to launch a series of books. And they were wondering if you'd be interested in taking a look at the pitch. And I said, damn it, because I had actually just signed contracts for new books, three new books of my own with HarperTeen. And I had deliberately padded the timeline to give myself nice extra time so I could write extra slow, just at my own pace, as if I didn't have a deadline in the world. And I was so looking forward to that because I had just spent 5-6 years in the Three Dark Crowns universe and I had actually gotten quite behind. And I wanted some time away from that series and a little bit of headspace to switch gears from being in the same universe for so long. But you don't say no to Buffy. So it's like, yes, show me the pitch. Please let me see what's going on here. And they sent me, you know, their synopsis and their concept. And I was like, well, obviously I'm going to say yes. I'm just stalling for time to figure out how to work it into my pre-existing schedule. But luckily we were able to get together, the editor at Disney and my agent and I, and kind of work out a schedule that we thought would work for everyone that would allow me to meet my existing deadlines and the new ones and still have the book come out on time. They wanted to time the release for Buffy's 25th anniversary, which is happening now. So yay, we made it because the book's out and it's okay.
So even being a huge fan of Buffy and watching it and knowing every detail, were you still nervous to make sure you pleased all the fans that have been fans forever too?
Yes, yes. But the important thing to remember, and the important thing that I had to remember and realize right away, is that I was not going to please everyone. That hurt. That realization hurt me as a fan, because I know as a fan what it feels like to have like a headcanon and your own hopes for the character, especially one that we have had in our lives for as long as we've had Buffy. Like, Buffy belongs to us in a way that other properties just really don't. So I just had to kind of clear that and just write, you know, the most fun Buffy thing that I could manage. My goal was to recapture the tone of the show, of the classic show. I wanted readers, when they sat down and cracked open in Every Generation, I wanted them to kind of feel like they were watching like a lost episode, or, you know, just a brand new series, a shortened series, a condensed series of a new show. I wanted that banter. I wanted the patrols. I wanted the meetings in the library. I wanted a watcher you could make fun of, but also admire, and he's kind of a badass. And I wanted Monsters of the Week. I had all these ideas for Monsters of the Week. And then when I sat down to actually write the book, I realized, oh, hey, this takes a lot more pages than I imagined, like, you know, so I can only like work in one or two Monsters of the Week. And then I had to get to the big bad and the overarching mystery of the series, which is what happened to Buffy and the other Slayers. Because when the book opens, Buffy and the other Slayers are actually presumed dead in an explosion. And it was like, what? Which, by the way, was also my reaction when I read that part of the pitch. So I understand, like, some people are understandably hesitant. They're like, you killed Buffy? No, I'm not even going to touch this book because you can't kill Buffy. But, you know.
Wait. Can I just say really quickly, Buffy's been killed before. So, you know.
She has died twice. Yeah. She has died twice.
So I appreciate what you're saying, but really, I think fans should give you a little bit of leeway in that fact that, yeah, this is, it's like that episode where somebody says, oh, it's the apocalypse, and everybody says, again? There's always a chance Buffy will be killed.
I think I would have kind of, since I'm new to the Buffyverse, I haven't earned that trust with fans yet. So they don't trust me there, because, you know, their hearts are fragile and our hopes are fragile, and they want to make sure that the property and Buffy's character is going to be handled in the right way. So that was very important to me too. But yeah, I signed off many of my early emails to my editor with, but you know, Buffy's not dead, right? And then she would just ignore me and just answer the other questions I had. And then the next email I signed, I'd be like, but you know, she can't really die, right? And I'm just like, we'll see. You know, they're very scampy, those Buffy team.
So piggybacking off what you were just talking about, I thought the way in which you captured the tone of the original show was incredibly successful, especially the dialogue. Like the dialogue just has the same banteriness, the same snarkiness that the original show did. And I'm wondering how you found your way into that voice.
Well, I have a feeling that since I watched Buffy during my teenage years and pretty consistently, you know, 7 years you spent with Buffy and you watched the repeats, and it wasn't like a short season like you get on Netflix, you just binge it for a week and then it's over. We had to wait months. Buffy was with us from September to May in some capacity or other. So I think it probably, like, that's how I develop my own sense of humor. Like, my sense of humor is Buffy's sense of humor. My way of speaking and thinking is Buffy's way of speaking and thinking, since it was the big show of my youth. And so it kind of just happened naturally. I'd never written Buffy fan fiction. I'd never like tried to write in a Buffy voice. But the minute I opened my Scrivener, it was just like, boom, it just poured right out. I've never written a book this long, this fast. I only had 3 months to do it. And that's way faster than any of my other books have written themselves. All These Bodies, my other new novel that came out this fall, is about 70,000 words. And it took so long. Like, that book wrote itself at 500 words a day. But with In Every Generation, it's about 100,000 words, but they flew. So yeah, also I had a friend who'd actually never seen the series, like never seen it, and I couldn't let that stand. So we started a rewatch right when I was preparing to dive into the book. And I didn't have time because, like I said, my deadline was really tight. I didn't have time to finish the rewatch. So I started writing like right after this first season. And then we were kind of like writing and watching concurrently. So it was just full immersion. Days, nights, Buffy, all summer long.
I love that Willow and Willow's daughter are a central character in this book. I think one of the things that always interested me with Buffy was I loved Buffy so much, but I related a lot to the character of Willow. Just, you know, like I always wore things that maybe didn't come out as well as they seemed in high school. Like my sweaters were a little too fluffy, and, you know, like there was always a miscommunication between like flirting or knowing really like what I was looking for versus like another person just in general. And it's just very interesting to me that so many fans love her so much. She had such, I mean, Buffy and Willow almost had like opposing arcs, you know, just in how their characters went and how they developed. Did you want to talk a little bit about sort of jumping into the Buffyverse, but with Willow, a Willow-centric or Willow's family-centric story?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you had asked me before writing this book, which characters from the original Buffy would I want to work with? Like my dream four. These are the ones that I would have said. I would have said, you know, Willow, Spike for sure. And I've always been a huge fan of Oz. I just love him, even though he's actually pretty hard to write because he's so nonverbal. And doing that on the page, it's like Oz, just talk, damn it. But he, you know, doesn't like to. So, but he's so funny and still clever and adds so much to a scene just by his presence. So I was glad that he was in the pitch. Aside from Buffy herself, they were the ones that I would have really loved to work with. And Giles, I do miss Giles. But Willow in particular, I would say she was the hardest one to write. Her arc within In Every Generation gave me the most trouble. And I also wanted to give it the most care besides Frankie. Like Frankie is the central character, her daughter, who becomes the new Slayer. But aside from Frankie, I was really, really careful with Willow because I think as a fandom, we are the most protective of her. I think a lot of us identified with Willow, even more than maybe we identified with Buffy, because, you know, very few of us slay vampires for a living. Like it's a small percentage. But a lot of us are awkward. I mean, that's, you know, day to day. So, and Willow is not only gay, I mean, she's a gay icon, a gay icon. So you have to be careful about how you depict that, and you want to honor all the relationships from the past series and just imagine, you know, a life for her and what she'd be up to, what kind of mom she would be. I mean, that was really strange when I heard Willow was going to be a mom. I'm like, wait, how? And when? And the kid is how old already? Like, okay, when would that have had to happen? And we had to like go back and do all this math. So Willow has maybe the most going on as far as the adults in the book. They all have a lot going on. Oz is back in town learning to raise his teenage cousin / nephew, and he's never done that before, but you know Oz, he pretty much takes everything in stride. Willow has been a mom this whole time, but now she's learning to be the mom of a slayer, so she's having a lot of like Joyce feelings. And also, it's been a long time since Willow's had a significant relationship, and now she has even less time for it. I mean, you know, there's just a lot on her plate. She's returning to magic. In every generation, she actually hasn't really touched magic since Frankie's been born. She just kind of, you know, washed her hands of it, said, you know, I'm kind of retiring. I've done everything I need to do magically, and it's probably wise that I back off from it. But now Frankie needs her, so she's got to find her way back into it. And she has a very complicated history, of course, with magic. So yeah, Willow's got a lot going on. But I also didn't want her storyline to be too heavy. You know, that's what I loved about Buffy, is they could tackle these big, heavy, dramatic issues, but they could also in the very next scene spin it around and just make you like fall off your couch laughing. So I wanted her to have like light moments full of joy and funny moments where she awkwardly worries, you know, just that classic Willow mix of complete and utter badassery and resolve with like floopy Muppetness. So yeah, that's and going forward in future books, she's going to have even more to deal with.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned Oz, because you know, that his part in the novel and his family were one of the most interesting parts from my perspective. I really enjoyed how this is something that you capture, I think, of the original spirit of the show, is that Buffy is about family, like your blood family, but it's also about chosen family, like found family. And I'm wondering if that was something that you were consciously thinking of while you were writing.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Actually, that is going to be a big theme in book two, is found family versus blood family. I have a pretty big arc in mind for the Osborne werewolf clan. I feel like Oz and his werewolfiness was kind of underused on the show, which is understandable. There was a lot going on in the show. You know, you can't. So I had this vision of like, I'm gonna have some werewolf drama. I'm gonna pull some werewolf drama in here in book two, and it carries through actually to book three, because once again, there was not enough time to resolve it. But definitely the whole first book, which I call the first season in my head, is kind of forming Frankie's Scoobies. Frankie becoming a slayer, stepping into those shoes, learning that she can actually do it, because she's lived in Buffy's shadow her whole life. Like, she hasn't just known about slayers. She's watched the best slayer, the slayer of slayers. And now she's supposed to be one? Like, no, like she does not feel like she can do that. So it was very much, you know, rounding up her Scoobies and turning them into a found family. And then, you know, in the next book, I'm just going to throw a bunch of curveballs and see how they handle it.
About the second book and the third, is there a timeline of when they're going to be coming out?
I hope so. I already have a draft done. My editor and I are going to dive into edits soon. I'm hoping that it will be out next year, and then the last book the year after that.
So about Frankie and the new Scoobies, we all, I mean, there's, I don't want to say there's big shoes to fill, but you know, you have these larger than life characters like Spike, who I myself had like a fandom arc with, like where I'd be like, oh, it's this guy. And then just this back and forth to he's back. oh no, stay away. No, I want you to come back, which I guess is sort of like everybody's arc with Spike now that I'm thinking about it. You know, and you had obviously Willow and Buffy and Anya, who's another one who I adore. But when you're crafting Frankie and the new Scooby Gang, did anybody just jump out at you? Did you have a hard time at all finding Frankie's voice, or was she just like, "Hi, I'm here"?
The easiest new Scooby was Jake Osborne, Oz's nephew / cousin / high school teen wolf. So, and he was so lovable and dopey and very much like a big dog. You know, he had those werewolf qualities that were constantly made fun of. Frankie was a little harder. I knew what she was like because she's kind of like a mixture of Buffy and Willow. You know, she's got some of Willow's awkwardness, but also she's got a little bit more of like Buffy stubbornness. She's very outspoken in the things that she believes, but she's very reserved in everything else. So, and her fighting style was surprising to me. Like, I knew she'd be bad at it in the beginning, but man, she's bad. She's bad at it. And it was like hilariously bad. She had the moves and she had the strength, but like Frankie fights occasionally to Yakety Sax. Like, it's really just a bunch of spinning and screaming, and you know, she'll try something, it will not go her way. And I thought, well, she'll grow out of that. But really, I'm starting to think that is just Frankie's signature style. You know, she's not going to be as acrobatic as Buffy. She will improvise like Buffy, but sometimes, whereas that works for Buffy, sometimes it's not going to work for Frankie, and she knows that going in. Haley is Vi Larson's little sister. Vi Larson was a potential slayer that we met in season 7. She was played by Felicia Day, the fabulous Felicia Day. And so she comes to town because she's worried about her sister and she wants to find out what happened to them. And then she falls in with Frankie and the Scoobies and she becomes a Scooby. And she was difficult too. It was like, you know, you got two teen girls and they have these commonalities, and how do you differentiate them? Like, especially their voices. Their personalities are fairly different, but their voices on the page, that was a little bit more of a challenge. I had to make a few passes there. And it's like, no, Frankie talks like this, and Frankie would say this, and Haley would be much more blunt and, kind of a-holy sometimes. So, yeah, it was, the whole point was, you know, kind of, do you guys watch Cobra Kai, perchance?
Yes. I need to watch that. I keep seeing these feeds and telling Jen about them on TikTok. Like, and it looks hilarious. I need to watch that. Does anybody else on this interview watch it? No, nobody else. Okay.
It's hilarious. And the writing is very good. Like, the writing is very clever. It's very self-aware. They know exactly what they're doing with the nostalgia, and they just lay it on thick. They don't even hold back. So if ever you have seen Karate Kid or Karate Kid Part 2 and you're not watching the series, I mean, you need to watch the series. There's some serious waxing on and waxing off going on. So I was trying to do something similar, because like the brilliance behind Cobra Kai is they bring existing fans in with Daniel-san, and references to Miyagi and references to the original movie. And then they introduce this kind of new crew, Daniel-san's daughter and Johnny's son and a new kid. And at first you're just like, okay, less of the kids, more of the originals. But as the show goes on, you're like, okay, no, I wanna know what's going on with these kids. So I wanted to sneak the new Scoobies in, like right under your nose. And it was hard to hold the original Scoobies back to let the new Scoobies shine, because, you know, we all were just like, well, let Willow handle it or let Spike handle it. Obviously he can take care of it, but that wasn't, you know, Frankie's journey. They all had to kind of rein themselves in and let her be the slayer. And I, as the writer, had to do that too.
I know Jody had some questions involving switching gears a little bit, involving your pets.
Yeah. I did look at your bio on your website today, and I found your sons and daughters, and I love their names. Everybody loves the names, and we want to know how you came up with Armpit McGee for your Sphinx Cat.
And specifically also, because I've always, like, ever since that first Austin Powers movie came out, I have been dying to know what a hairless cat feels like to hold.
Oh, they're delightful. A hairless cat will change your life in that it'll just take it over. He just totally took over my life. He's actually sleeping right now, which is the only reason I can do this podcast, because otherwise it'd be all like naked butt all the time. And they feel like a really warm suede, like a hot water bottle, like a peach fuzz soft suede hot water bottle. And that's kind of what you use them for. You're just like, I'm cold, come here. You know, I warm my hands up on him, and he's just like, why are you doing this to me? So yeah, and they're very personable. They're very much like dogs or toddlers. They require a lot of attention, and they'll let you know if they're not getting it. As for his name, I've kind of named all the other pets from fandoms that my husband and I enjoy. So Agent Scully from the X-Files, Obi-Dog Kenobi from Star Wars, Tyrion Cannister from Game of Thrones. But the naked cat was his idea. I kind of wasn't on board because, like you, I didn't know if I could pet it. Like, I didn't know, you know, am I going to stick to this cat? I want to be able to pet my pet. So I let him name it, and he's like, Armpit, because he's going to feel like a sweaty armpit. I'm like, that's great. Well, he has to have a last name. We can't just call him Armpit. So we want Armpit McGee, because that's just, yeah.
I have a follow-up question to Armpit. What's his nickname? Because, you know, you never call your pet's name by his name. So does he have any funny nickname, like Pitty? Like,
actually, his aunt does call him Pit-Pit. So, and he only likes things that starts with a P, according to her. So he likes potatoes, and he smells like a potato. They do have really weird smells sometimes. So yeah, Pit-Pit. I call him Baby because he is the baby. He's my youngest, he's 5, and he's just a huge baby.
That's terrific.
Yeah, we were all discussing our pet names before when Jody came up and wanted to, with the list of your awesome pet names, by the way. And I have 2 cats, and they were supposed to be named Aziraphale and Crowley from Good Omens. But unfortunately for Aziraphale, that is a really difficult name for not just me to say and everybody in my family. And I wasn't going to call her Zira because to me that's Planet of the Apes. So her name, we kept her shelter name, which is Juno, but Aziraphale is her stage name, and Crowley is Crowley. But we sometimes call her, we call Crowley Slippy Cat because he's very shy and he likes to slip by us. But we also call Juno Tomatoes because one time she sat in a like a tray of cans of crushed tomatoes. So that kind of stuck.
And I actually also have a cat named after the X-Files fandom. I have a cat named Samantha, who is named after Samantha Mulder.
I also did some other searching. Like, I went on Goodreads because I'm a big fan of using that website, and I saw your bio, and maybe it's older or not, but I enjoy that you got 4 different TV theme songs in there, even the Shalala, and I was like, oh, Family Ties, sweet. I am singing all those theme songs in a rotation all day because of you, and I wanted to thank you for that.
I am so happy because I worked so long on that bio, and I think you're the only person who's ever said anything about it. And I thought the Shalala at the end was like, well, that's just cheating. No. But I'm, you know, you get it. Everybody knows where it's from. So
it was genius. I was just reading it. Yeah. And I was like, wait a second, that's Different Strokes. And then I kept going. And then I was like, it's Full House. And
The Golden Facts Girls. Of Life, the Golden Girls. Yeah.
Yeah. I am a huge Golden Girls fan. So I was like, oh, nice touch. And then the Sha-la-la-la, I'm like, I used to always sing that part when the song would be on the show. I miss theme songs. So that was great. So good job on that.
I'm glad you caught those, and I'm glad you appreciate it. We just started watching The Golden Palace.
Yes, me too.
Which was like, you know, it's on Hulu now. It's like that bonus season of The Golden Girls, just without Dorothy and the girls are running a hotel. I can't believe Don Cheadle is on it. Like, that weirded me out. Oh, yeah, my gosh.
Or Chong? Yeah. It's such a weird thing because Cheadle hasn't aged, really. He just lost the mustache.
Yeah. Yeah. And he got a little muscular, you know, for some roles, but he looks a little thin in these. But holy wow. It's weird to see him.
It was a funny, interesting show.
Yeah, I have to check that out, actually. Being a Golden Girls and a Don Cheadle fan, my favorite role of Don Cheadle, though, I have to say, is when he voices Donald Duck in the 2017 DuckTales. It's always quite amusing. For those of you who do not know, there are times when Donald Duck speaks normal. They give him like a voice modulator, so he actually speaks normal for a short amount of time. And then when they introduce Daisy Duck, she's the only one who he sounds normal to. And it's always Don Cheadle. So, fun fact.
That's hilarious. I did not know he did that.
I've only seen one episode of Golden Palace so far. We just watched it last week, actually. And I thought it was really funny that they added the character of like a mischievous orphan, which seems like such a throwback sitcom technique. Like, it seemed like it was already kind of aged by the time that show was airing. And I just thought it was very funny.
It was nice though, right? Because like Don Cheadle's his foster parent. I mean, that was cool. I mean, yeah, it did seem very random, but also cool.
Yeah, very cool.
And they live in a hotel. Like, that would ever be approved. Like, he would not have been approved as a foster parent.
And that kid's accent was so thick, and you're like, where did he come from? Like, at first.
Oh.
Thank you so much. This was super, super cool.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm always up for like geeking out about Buffy. So, you know, anytime.
Well, if you ever, we always invite people back. So if you ever want to come back and talk to us about Buffy or any of your other books, you are absolutely welcome.
Excellent. Yeah, just send me an email. The next book will be out next year. We can totally do this again in next February.
Very cool. Or if you ever just want to talk about old sitcoms, I think like Jody's like, yes, let's do it.
And hairless cats, of course.
And hairless cats. You really like, I'm making my case to my husband. I'm like, listen, it feels like a hot water bottle. We need this cat.
It's cold here.
Yeah. And he will love it. He will love that little baby cat. He will say he won't, just like I said I wouldn't. And then it's the center of your universe before you realize, and you're buying it all these weird clothes and, you know, yeah. Yeah. Just prepare to be lost in the world of nude cats.
Awesome. All right. Well, this was really exciting. I'm really, we're all really excited to see where this series goes and everything that you want to write. Therefore, actually one real quick question before we go. You mentioned you never wrote Buffy fan fiction, but have you ever written fan fiction before? And are you comfortable saying what fandoms you wrote in?
Yeah, sure. I wrote fan fiction like during college, because during college you're reading so much that I barely had time to read for fun. And I barely had the brain to write for fun for myself. Like I didn't have it in me to create my own stories because I was writing papers and, you know, wanted to die. So I wrote fan fiction during those years. And in those times it was Harry Potter, of course, Sailor Moon, actually a little bit, and Gargoyles. Do you guys remember that cartoon? Yep. Yeah, a little bit of Gargoyles fan fiction.
Again, I know this isn't a video, but like, listeners are gonna have to trust that the reaction when you said Gargoyles was just like this jaw drop at the same time, except Jody's wearing a mask because she's in a public space, but it was just this triple jaw drop that was just beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us. This has been Jen with my co-hosts,
Jody,
Jessica,
in conversation with Kendara Blake. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
Oh, it was a delight. All right. So it looks like we are ready to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.